Reading this morning is from Mark chapter 10, verses 35 to 45, and I'm reading from the New Living Translation this morning. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came over and spoke to Jesus. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do us a favor." "What is it?" he asked. "In your glorious kingdom, we want to sit in places of honor next to you," they said. "One at your right and the other at your left." But Jesus answered, "You don't know what you are asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of sorrow I am about to drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism of suffering I must be baptized with?" "Oh, yes," they said, "we are able." And Jesus said, "You will indeed drink from my cup and be baptized with my baptism, but I have no right to say who will sit on the thrones next to mine. God has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen." When the 10 other disciples discovered what James and John had asked, they were indignant. So Jesus called them together and said, "You know that in this world, kings are tyrants and officials lord it over the people beneath them. But among you, it should be quite different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be the first must be the slave of all. For even I, the Son of Man, came here not to be served, but to serve others, and to give my life as a ransom for many."
Thanks, Andrew. Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to talk about getting ahead. So if we could have the first slide up, we're going to start with a pop quiz. So who is this person? Excellent. There's no chocolate fish, by the way. Who's this person? Excellent. Next one. Yep. Next one. You guys are so knowledgeable. Okay, here's a harder one. Oh, not hard for you guys, obviously. Okay. No, not Bruce Springsteen. Okay, and this one? Cristiano Ronaldo, famous soccer player. Okay, what do all those people have in common? They've all been described as, if we could have the next slide, goats. Greatest of all time. And yeah, I could add Federer, you're right. But there's a limit to how many I could put up here. The thing is, people look up to them. You know, we admire their accomplishments, don't we? And they've got lots of followers, if we could have the next slide. There are so many people follow goats. So Lisa Carrington, unbelievably, on Instagram, has 66,400 followers. Wow. Richie McCaw, who retired, 9 years ago and hasn't done much since, 151,000 followers. And in fact, if you go to his Facebook page, he has over 600,000 people following him on Facebook. Extraordinary. Tiger Woods knocks them out of the park. 3.2 million. Whoa. Simone Biles, higher or lower, you reckon? Higher, definitely higher. 6.9 million. Taylor Swift, you reckon? A bit more? Bit more? Yeah. 20 million? No, 275 million. Cristiano Ronaldo. Lots of you would follow Cristiano, I suppose. Well, he's got 605 million, so more than double Taylor Swift. Now, I'm sure there are many people, except other than the front row here, who don't follow any of these people on Instagram or Facebook. Yeah, their figures. Do you know what Instagram is, Andrew? The InstaWeb, yeah. Because we're supposed to be following Jesus, aren't we? And he's got 2.4 billion followers on the planet. And what we're talking about today is two of his key followers, James and John, who also were aspiring to be great and famous, as we will see. So if we could have the next slide, please. I come from the car business, SP stands for special performance, and I thought I would focus on SPs this morning for goats. And there are three SPs in this passage that we read today. There's the selfish petition of James and John. But Jesus responds with his statement of purpose. And then the third SP I want to pick on is the spiritual pattern for us as followers of Jesus. So let's get into the passage. So if we could have the next slide, please. We start off with a selfish petition of James and John. Here are these two guys who are requesting to be seated at Jesus' right and left hand in the kingdom of heaven. Why are they wanting that? Well, they want three things, I think. The first thing is they want preeminence. You know, they wanted the glory and honor of being next to the throne in heaven. Secondly, they want proximity. They want to be close to Jesus. Now, if you look at Matthew's gospel version of this story, you'll see that the person who asks Jesus for the position is not James and John, it's their mum. And their mum, whose name I think is Salome, she is reputedly the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. So James and John are like the cousins. So they've kind of got the inside running, they're thinking. You know, it's like the mafia, without the murders and the guns and all that sort of stuff. But they're thinking, we're family. We should be kind of right in there. And, of course, I think they probably want power, you know, authority in the coming kingdom. So another pop quiz, if you could have the next slide, please. What are these two pictures of? Buckingham Palace and Martin Luther King. Why do you think I put them together? I didn't think anybody would know this one because it's really obscure. Because at the core of the request of James and John, what Martin Luther King called in a sermon he preached on this exact passage exactly 2 months before he died. And what he called it was the drum major instinct, hence the Buckingham Palace picture, the drum major instinct. And I quote from his sermon, he says, "We all have the desire to be out front, a desire to lead the parade, a desire to be first. We all want to be recognized, to receive distinction. We all want to get ahead." To me, it sort of seems a little bit, if we could have the next slide, please, a little bit like the genie in the lamp. You know, you rub a magic bottle and the genie appears and says, you've got three wishes. God, can you please do whatever we want? We want a left and right seat of God. Well, God, bringing it back to our terms perhaps, God, I really want to be able to get an A in this exam. Or, God, I know I haven't been to church for a while, but I really need a raise at work, and if you give me a raise at work, I'll come to church. Or, God, I'm always at church, I just need a girlfriend. That was me when I was a teenager. And I got Claire. eventually. But you know, it's bizarre that these guys are making this request straight after Jesus has told them in a passage, the passage immediately before this, Jesus says, oh, we're going to Jerusalem and there I'm going to be executed and then rise again. All they're focused on is not going to Jerusalem and dying and all this sort of stuff. All they're focused on is what's in it for them. All they can see is the crown, but not the cross. They are focused on the position, but not the pain. They want the reward, but they don't want to pay the price. And so what does Jesus do? If we could have the next slide, please. He tells them he's about to go through a life experience. So he calls it the cup which I'm about to drink from. He's going to go through a life experience that they cannot imagine. Do they want that? Can they do that? They say, oh yeah, of course we can. But they've got no idea what he's talking about. Because it's not just dying on a cross. It's the fact that Jesus is going to take the sin of the whole world on his shoulders, be completely alienated from God and experience the wrath of God at that sin. It's way beyond what they can imagine. He affirms that they are going to drink from the same cup. They're going to walk the same road as him. And many of the disciples, of course, do go on to be martyred. I mean, James is one of the first. John isn't. John gets exiled to the island of Patmos. So they kind of walk the road that Jesus is going to walk. They do suffer, but they're not going to suffer what Jesus suffered. They don't carry all that sin. And as Jesus says, as for positions in heaven, it's not up to him. It's up to the Father. That makes sense? So that's the selfish petition. So if we could have the next slide, we're on to a statement of purpose. It seems like James and John have stepped out of line here. And the other disciples, of course, will be much more balanced, more reasonable. Yeah, right. They get on their high horse. They're indignant at the request of James and John. They're deeply offended. I suspect their offense was maybe because they thought that James and John were kind of zumping them, and they wanted positions of authority in heaven as well. It's interesting they get angry when they perceive somebody's getting ahead of them. Mm. Do we do that, or is that just me? I know I begrudge the guy who overtakes me on the inside when we're merging traffic. You know, I think, he's got ahead of me. How dare he? do we hold grudges? Of course we do. We all hold some sort of grudges. Even though we share the peace each Sunday, we still hold grudges and we feel resentment, not necessarily people in the congregation, but just other people who've offended us in some way. If we have the next slide, please. Who here is ambitious? Be honest. Wow, who wants to get ahead? Good on you. Another honest man. Who wants to be great? Excellent. Another honest person. That's fantastic. We actually all have ambition. That's the point of Martin Luther King's sermon. It's very healthy. Like when we were growing up, we all got an education because we wanted to get ahead. We wanted the best jobs that could get us ahead. If we have kids, we want our kids to get a good education so they can get ahead. There's nothing wrong with having ambition. But what does Jesus say here? What does he do? What's his statement of purpose? Well, what he does is he gets them all together, all the disciples, and he addresses the issue. And he reminds them how the Gentile leaders lord it over their followers. This is the way of the world. Leaders gain power and then they exercise it. Yeah? Anyone get upset when the government we elect suddenly lords it over us? I know I do. I get very upset about it. But Jesus says, if we could have the next slide, not so with you. This, however, is not the way it is among you. If one of you wants to be great, he must be the servant of the rest. If one of you wants to be first, he must be the slave of all. What does that mean? Notice he's not rebuking their ambition. There's nothing wrong with ambition. He's not rebuking the ambition. What he's doing is redefining what it means to have ambition, what it means to be great. He's restating how things are supposed to work in the kingdom. And that is that the path to the top always leads through the bottom. If you want to be a leader, you have to learn how to serve. In fact, be a slave, it's saying up there. If we want to be recognized and respected, we have to actually give up ambition and selfishness. Because true greatness in the kingdom is not about wielding power and authority over people. It's about serving them. Something that some of our elected politicians need to learn if they want to be great. So if we have the next slide, please. I think there are two kind of ways of looking at this. The first one is obviously servant leadership. That's the obvious interpretation of the passage, and I'm sure it's a thing that we often see in the organizations that we work for or get involved in. So an example for me is I used to work in Toyota in the United States back in the early 2000s, And at that stage, there were two chief executives, an American and a Japanese. They're sort of co-CEOs. And the American guy, a guy called Jim Press, absolutely phenomenal guy. Brilliant, gifted, smart, charismatic. His speeches were just things of wonder. I was in so much awe of the guy. And he was the smartest guy in the room. And he knew it, and he was very determined that you should know it too. He literally ordered everybody around. He was hated. He lauded it over everybody. As it says in the passage, he lauded it over the other Gentiles, although, ironically, he was Jewish. But these things happen. The contrast was Yoshi. Yoshi Inaba was the Japanese CEO. He was a humble man. He was assigned to work in the United States for 5 years. He was determined to make the most of those 5 years just helping people, serving the staff, the dealers, the customers, anyone who needed help, he was always there for them. He was loved and respected, and eventually it was his influence that prevailed, not the arrogant American. And no doubt we've all had similar experiences of servant leadership and not so servant leadership. If we could have the next slide. When Jesus first taught the disciples about this in Mark chapter 9, he used the example of a child. And Jesus used the child analogy in many different ways. But in respect to this passage, there are two particular things I want to draw out. When kids are born, they are incredibly demanding, right? Do you know that, Elisha? You have to serve them. I mean, they need everybody to serve them, otherwise they're going to die. But at the same thing, on the other side of that, children can't do anything for adults. They can't help them get ahead. There's no transaction involved. It's all about love and service to the kid. And so the point Jesus is doing is that we have to serve a child without expecting anything in return. Sometimes when we serve, we expect at least a thank you, you know, or a pat on the back. Well done. Appreciate your service. But actually, we need people who can see beyond their own needs for thank yous and being, you know, well done, nice of you to do that. We need people who are prepared to put aside their own needs and just serve others. So the example, as I was thinking about this, for me in this church is Dot Costley, who I don't think is here today. Sorry, I can embarrass her. Next week she gets back. When I first came to this church 27-odd years ago, she was the worship leader. Then she became just a singer because she was kind of aging a little bit. And then she has got involved in multiple things. She's always in kitchens. She's serving dinners to vestries. She's in her mid-70s. She's learnt the technology that she can work the slide thing. I mean, she is phenomenal. She's never seeking thank yous. She's just always serving, humbly in the background. Actually, there's lots of people in this church like that who just serve quietly and humbly in the background. We are really blessed by your service. Even though you hardly ever get thanked, there's an opportunity. Thank you. And as Andrew said, on November the something or other, 3rd, we're going to have a thank you celebration for those people who just serve. We have the next slide. The second part of this is the contrast between worldly and divine values, because this passage is contrasting world values, which are equate greatness and power, with dominance and getting ahead. And Jesus is putting up divine values, which associates greatness with humility and service. Another is loving your neighbor. So for me, the kind of examples that I wrestle with is we all want to get ahead, right? We want to make more of our lives. We want to get more. We want to spend less on the things of life. We want to get good deals. We want to have lower taxes and all those sorts of things. But all of those things are about self. Where does service for others fit into that? How do we see others? So, you see, if I want to get lower taxes, yeah, lower taxes would be good. That'd be great for me, and it may be good for the country at a macroeconomic level. But if it means that, say, the university where I'm involved with, if the university doesn't have enough income and therefore has to cut courses to to get me lower taxes. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? See, I've got an education, so I'm fine. But what about the people who are wanting an education? So should I really want lower taxes? Is that service to others? Or if I leave the service and go down to the warehouse and get a great deal on a pair of sneakers, I say, oh, gee, I really did well there on that pair of sneakers. But if they were made at a sweatshop in China or Vietnam, is that really me getting ahead? Might be good for me, but is that loving my neighbor? Now, unfortunately, this is the way the world works. I don't have an answer to these dilemmas. But this is what Jesus, I think, is challenging us with in contrasting worldly values with divine values. Does that make sense? Martin Luther King talked about this, the drum major instinct, is that the need to get ahead, to always do better for yourself, as what keeps materialism alive. Because we end up valuing profit over people. We think mainly about ourselves and our own prosperity instead of serving and loving others. Sadly, that's how the system operates. It's the struggles we all have to wrestle with. Okay, last one is spiritual pattern. So if we could have the next slide, please. This is the last verse of it, verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So this is Jesus setting up the example of the ultimate spiritual pattern for our lives. Notice it starts with the words, for even. You know, it reminds us of who Jesus is, the Son of God. For even he came to serve. And if God could come in humility to serve us, to serve sinful humanity, then maybe we could learn from his example by prioritizing service to others over our personal ambition. Next slide, please, Gay. See, Jesus' passion was to serve. On the night before he was crucified, he took off his outer garment, gets down, and he washes the feet of his disciples. Even the feet of the guy who's about to go out and betray him, Judas Iscariot. That's going the extra mile, isn't it? Far out. And then the next day, he gets an unfair trial, gets beaten up, crucified, dies for us. The cost of service for Jesus was extraordinary. Cost him pain, his life, alienation from God, the wrath of God. But he willingly entered into death that we might enter into life. Genuinely the greatest of all time, a goat. So, in conclusion, where do we take all of this? Jesus sets us up with a paradox in this passage. The way to get ahead in the kingdom is to serve. For the Christian, the way up is always down. See, I think Jesus is trying to reorder our priorities in this. Effectively, he's saying, keep feeling the need to be first, to get ahead. But I want you to be first in love. And the way to be first in love is to serve. And through service, one can be great. See, you don't have to have a university degree to be great. You don't have to have lots of boyfriends and then break up with them and then write songs about breaking up with them to be great. Some of you will get that. Some of you did get that. You don't need to have the best golf swing in the world to be great, Claire. You don't need to have a highfalutin job to be great, Alistair. You don't need to have a sublime ability to forage in a ruck and get a rugby ball to be great. You don't need to be the world's best soccer player to be great. If we could have the next slide up, please. As Martin Luther King put it, not everybody can be famous, but everybody can be great, because greatness is determined by service. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. So I want you to ask yourself, is that the path you are walking? Are we seeking to get ahead in love? Are we seeking to serve You know, as Andrew will tell you, we have many places of ministry in this church. He may do a push after this. But question, ask yourself, are you serving? Because I think that's the message in this passage. It's calling each of us to a role in service in the church, in the communities in which we live, in our workplaces, in our families. Are you actively seeking to serve others? And the strange thing about God's kingdom is that as we serve others, as we bless others, we ourselves are blessed. Every person I know who's been truly happy has learned how to serve others. Because serving others makes God happy. It's what Jesus teaches. It's essential to being a faithful disciple. And amazingly, serving others makes us happy as well. May it be so for us today. Amen.